Crikey. Are you looking for a good time to take your date? Then come on down to the Star Drive-In. We got movies. If you like the cinema, if you're a fan of watching movies outdoors, come on down to Star Cinema. Star Drive-In. Come on down to Star Drive-In. You're going to have a rollicking good time, mate. Music. How was that Australian accent?
Yeah, that was good.
I mean,
welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I got to say, I'm a little disappointed. This movie didn't help me at all in understanding the game of cricket.
And Erica.
Has anybody seen Two Tires? I'm missing Two Tires, and I could really, if anybody just looking for Two Tires.
What kind of car you got? What kind of car?
57 Chevy, so it should be pretty easy to find those tires.
Those are a back order. Sorry about that.
Damn yeah. It.
In 1985, right, well, they were falling off trees, but I'm not sure about right now. And
yeah, oof.
Right now, we are starting off another Sci-Fi July. This time, Sci-Fi July presents Dystopian Summer. We're going to talk about all the movies released by New World set in the dystopian future.
I don't know what time of year it is. I mean, I don't know. Is it summer? What's happening right now? I feel like, you know, I've been trapped at this drive-in for a long time, guys, and I can't find a way out. I've watched so many bad movies. You would think a drive-in would get some good movies, but
just
I
grab
am,
a milkshake and give me one of your food tickets,
goodness.
And coupons,
yeah.
get
some,
you know, settle in,
get some,
light yourself a trash can fire, and just sit back and relax.
Get some beets, get some beets on your burger, and just relax.
I am so tired of beets, and I've been sleeping in my car for months.
So uncomfortable.
What is happening?
It's gotta be
it's
awful.
Really uncomfortable. I have burned through the lumbar support of my front seat. It is, my back is killing me.
That's right. Dystopian Summer. And that means we are going to talk about 1986's Dead End Drive-In.
Here now the news for July 4th, 1995. In the wake of widespread economic collapse, officials are reporting massive general strikes.
In the 1970s, there was Clockwork Orange. Then in the 1980s came Mad Max and The Road Warrior. Now comes a startling new vision that takes you into the apocalypse and beyond. Back to the old drive-in you used to know and love. Only now, when the show is over, there is no way out. Dead End Drive-In.
Right now. Not getting through to you, am I, son? No cabs, no buses, no transport. So, you're here. Government decides what to do with you. Government. This is your home.
You can't tell me they don't want to get out. Now.
Yeah, but they know they can't, son. There's no future.
Come with me.
Got.
Get out of here, and don't you try and stop me again.
And get out of the way! Hey! Stop it!
Welcome to your future, like it or not.
That's right. 1986 is Dead End Drive-In. Brought to you by Foster's Lager. The best beer to drink when you're trapped inside a drive-in in a post-apocalyptic landscape. Foster's, it's true. Australians drink it. Especially old guys. Make sure to grab a cold Foster's, sit back, and drink one today. They're free if you're willing to listen to an old guy talk. This was directed by Brian Trenchard-Smith, who took this project over for the departing Michael Jenkins, who just finished the 1985 musical Rebel with Matt Dillon, and would instead direct 1988's Emerald City, which is where he would start working with Nicholas Hammond, the actor who played Spider-Man in the late 70s shows that we just ranked back in May.
Because Nicholas Hammond left
the United States and settled in Australia. But anyway, Trenchard Smith, he had previously directed documentaries and then transitioned in action fare like 1975's The Man from Hong Kong, one of the movies that is shown in the drive-in during this. In fact, several Trenchard Smith movies are shown at the drive-in during this movie. And 1982's Turkey Shoot, which was released by New World Pictures as Escape 2000. Right before this, he had made a few kids' movies in BMX Bandits and Frog Dreaming, a.k.a. The Quest, as it is known in the United States, with Henry Thomas. And which we showed to our kids. And they were like, all right. It's kind of a weird one.
No better review than,
yeah.
All right.
Next, okay. We got to show them BMX Bandits. So that's what we got to show them next.
I remember liking that a lot when I was a kid, to be honest
with
you. BMX Bandits.
Oh.
We saw The Quest when we were younger too, but
yeah,
it was, which is
I remember
good
really liking The Quest, but that just might have been right. because I really liked Henry Thomas. Mm. Wasn't he in that?
Yeah,
he was.
Yeah.
We watched it because you were like, ooh, The Quest, and you were excited. Yeah. And the kids were like, all right. And anyway, he eventually moved to the U.S., where Trenchard Smith made a variety of low-budget exploitation genre movies, such as Night of the Demons 2, Leprechaun 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
That would be Leprechaun in Vegas, Leprechaun in Space, just for everybody who needs a reminder, and which are great, by the way. Well, great. You know, they're Leprechaun movies, but they're fun. And some TV movies and shows such as Silk Stockings, which eventually was owned by New World Television in seasons 5 and 6, but not when Trenchard Smith was directing a few episodes, directed about 5 episodes. This stars Ned Manning, who was a theater actor and had appeared on some Australian TV shows, but was, dare I say, still is, a relative unknown. This was on purpose, as Trenchard Smith told Cinefantastique in 1987. He said, "I wanted total unknowns for Dead End Drive-In, which is just as well as our budget couldn't have stretched to star names. I wanted a classic working class hero. Ned gives the impression that he would not be unemployed for long. There's a certain spark in him."
Is that because he runs around with broken cinder blocks in his hands? Which I, you know, shame on me. I haven't taken up that as part of my workout regimen, but I mean, we all should start tomorrow.
We all should. Just carry him above your head while you're jogging.
I'm not going to do that. That's going to hurt my hands. Can you imagine how dry and crusty his hands are from touching those cinder blocks? Ugh.
Yeah, but after you build up some calluses, you're going to be fine. Ugh. You know?
These hands were made for podcasting. I can't be wasting them on cinder block workouts.
The part that Ned played called for somebody who was in his early 20s, which led to Manning lying. And saying that he was 25, when in reality, he was 34 years old. And in fact, he said in the commentary that he turned 35 on the last day of the shoot.
But I need to know his moisturizing regimen.
I mean, yeah, well done.
I think it's probably cinder block based.
A lot of exfoliating is what you're saying.
Heavy exfoliating.
Yeah. Got it.
This also stars Natalie McCurry, another unknown who had only done one other acting job before this. She was a beauty queen And she would become Miss Australia in 1989. Hmm. And would continue an acting career, reuniting with Trenchard Smith in the 1993 TV series Time Tracks and the 1993 TV movie Official Denial. Here's where you can watch Dead End Drive-In. It is on Plex, or you can get the Arrow Blu-ray, or you can watch it as we watched it on the new Umbrella Import Blu-ray. That's how we all watched it.
I also have the Arrow Blu-ray in case I want to diversify my viewing experience. I have it too,
and I have watched it because I watched it a few years ago when I got it. So I did watch it once, but now it's going to be available, everybody, so if you need it. Because I have the Umbrella one, and it has right. tons of stuff. The Umbrella one is stacked, and I would highly recommend picking it up if you're interested, because it has all the stuff that you would need. Mark, what is Dead End Drive-In about?
Well, not every hairdresser is a good hairdresser. Sure. Chances are that when you're trapped in a drive-in movie theater with a bunch of other 20-somethings, one of them probably worked at a Supercuts. But that doesn't mean they were good at cutting other people's hair. Listen, just because the person working at Supercuts has a really cool haircut doesn't mean it's going to look good on you. Sometimes less is more. Okay?
True. Erica, what is Dead End Drive-In about?
Dead End Drive-In has very little to do with dead ends. Unless you're in that bathroom barbershop, and then it has everything to do with dead ends.
Exactly.
It's all about going to great lengths to find that special barber. And if that means going to a drive-in that you're going to be trapped in and live at, then so be it. Because looking good is more important than having freedom. Dead End Drive-In.
Well, you guys were very hung up on the haircut part of this movie.
This movie takes some wild swings in the haircut department.
That's true.
I think the woman working in the bathroom cut everyone's hair. She managed to do a terrible job on everyone.
Mm-hmm. It was not one of the jobs that they talked about being one that you could get employed doing at the drive-in.
Right.
True. Right. True. So, true.
You know, but take that for what it's worth. For me, though,
how many coupons per haircut do you think she got?
Oh, yeah, how many? You only get $30 a week. So how much does it cost?
But that's a good one.
Yeah.
Is that two pink tickets, you think?
At least.
Yeah,
probably.
It's a bit brutal. At the end of the week, you're like, I shouldn't have gotten this haircut. I just... Right.
I mean, it wouldn't have affected me at all. But, you know, for other people, I would have been hoarding those tickets.
Sure. I got so many of these tickets. For me, this movie, you know, when you are in a budding relationship... Mm-hmm. It's not a good idea to immediately move in together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And move in together, you mean move into your car together, right?
To a very small space.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm writing this down. Just in case. I know I've been married for a long time, but just in case, I want to know, don't move into my car.
The other
car.
Thing for me was like, have you ever gone to a party and you were like, oh, it's got all the party stuff I want. It's got some drinks. It's got a bunch of people having a wild time. It's got music. It's got tires on fire. All the things I normally like. But you're like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't want to be a part of this. And people try to get you into it, you're like, I just don't want to. Nope, I don't want this. I don't know why.
Is that why Carmen gave up so quickly? I mean, she very quickly decides, this is my life. Yeah. I'm totally in. And why do we want to leave exactly?
She loves it there. She has friends. She's got friends. She's got haircuts. She's eating milkshakes for every meal. Like, Carmen is essentially
eating
a child.
The milkshakes.
Yeah. What else do you do with a milkshake?
She has more options than just milkshakes.
How do you eat one? It's got to take forever.
She She has all the major food groups.
Lemonade, Fanta, Pepsi, and thick shakes. Chocolate, strawberry, vanilla.
She also drinks a lot of Pepsi.
Yeah.
So think about
exactly
how dry.
Why I'm out on this party, Mark. Exactly
right.
Why.
Think
you
about
know what?
How dry Crab's hands are and how dry her mouth is. They're a perfect pair because that Pepsi is just zapping her mouth of any moisture. Zapping. And those cinder blocks that he jogs with are zapping his hands of any moisture.
He likes a good dry job.
We don't know that for sure. This movie does not explore that part.
Welcome to the dead end drive-in, home of the dry job.
And again, I know we're not at final questions, but what are the jobs? Because when they go to that concession stand, the lady mentions that they could get jobs there, but what are the jobs? Are there job postings? Is there a job board? Are there interviews? What are the jobs?
It's her and the guy who runs the office. Yeah. It's the two of them. They have to get together and do some powwows. They never have a scene together. It's weird. They're the only two people to run that place.
And the only two.
They've
employees.
Been married a long time, so they know their place. And you know that's
they
how
they were married.
It
they give each other space. I mean, why not? Sure, why not?
Now, to be totally transparent, I remember seeing this poster as a kid and really wanting to watch this movie.
Sure.
For some reason, I had manifested in my mind that this was a horror movie. I don't know why, but I thought the way the poster
name?
Looked with the guy with the makeup, I thought, oh, this is definitely a horror movie, which it's not.
Yeah.
But I was like, where's the guy on the poster?
Right.
In this
movie. Is
that is a New World poster. That is the poster they put together for this movie.
Got it. And understand my disappointment that guy, someone who I remember this poster vividly from when I was a kid, did not end up in the movie.
Yeah, he's not there. And what's weird is I also saw this a lot and I was like, oh, cool. Adam Ant's in another movie. That's what I always would think when I'd see this in the video store. I gotta see Adam Ant in another movie, but he's not in the movie either. Neither is the guy in the poster. And guess what, the guy in the poster is not Adam Ant, and he's nowhere to be found in this movie.
You had to move down to the S part of the aisle where Slam Dance was, then you can catch
Adam Ant. Yeah, then you get some Adam Ant in your life. Well, let's talk about Let's go over the Letterboxd synopsis.
Okay.
We are on Letterboxd.
Cool.
So give us a
follow
there if you can.
I bet you it has something to do with the drive-in.
It is very brief. So here we go. In the future, a health nut and his tag-along girlfriend.
Wow.
A health nut and his tag-along girlfriend.
Wow.
Someone
hated this movie at Letterboxd.
Yeah,
this is so short, and they are so wrong already. I will give them in the future so far.
Yeah.
In the future, like crushing a giant plate of spaghetti is the first
Crush
step
it.
In becoming a health nut.
Mark,
Got
he's
it.
Building up. He's building up.
Yeah, right. He's building up.
He's
got
building
it,
up. Yeah, and his tagline girlfriend. They're going on a date. They go to the drive-in. I mean, health nut, I guess he doesn't want to just eat the crap at the drive-in, but that doesn't mean he's a health nut. Amazing. Anyway, his tagline girlfriend become trapped in a drive-in theater that has become a concentration camp for outcast youths.
Oh.
I mean, that part is pretty accurate. The description
but they don't really
so,
explain
but.
Why that they've created this concentration camp.
Right.
Part is left up to the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. In the commentary, Brian Trenchard-Smith says that he probably should have built in a bit more information so you would know. But their view of it was, or what he says, and what there's another commentary on the Umbrella disc, so you get like a producer and the lead actor, Ned Manning, and they talk about it, and it's this, the government was set up this camp to to put all the young kids in, kind of keep them all contained so that they wouldn't be out making a ruckus
and
giving them all the things that they thought they might like.
That would have been a good
part to add. I didn't know from the movie. That said, it's not something that bothered me, but you know, it is something, because I feel like I was like, okay, you're not going to give us lots of information, so we just kind of have to figure it out for ourselves. I don't mind that. It didn't bother me, but when I heard that, I was like, oh, well, I don't really know if this movie kind of tells me that. But
it doesn't.
Yeah.
But
it didn't tell any of us that.
To go back to your question about Carmen and why she gets in there, she gets used to the drive-in, or gets sold on the drive-in so fast. I have to go back to the beginning when our main character, Jimmy, a.k.a. Krabs, is jogging through town and immediately has a ninja star thrown at him. And, I mean, that's happened to me so many times on my runs around the neighborhood. Yeah.
Is that the one that hit the Rambo 8 poster?
Correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you see that, you're probably like, you know what? You don't have to deal with that at the drive-in. So, you know,
I guess the question I would have is, when a ninja star is thrown at you during your jog, is that the end of your jog? I mean, do you turn around at that point, or do you say, well, I've still got to continue my route, so I'll just keep going?
If you're just doing this just to train yourself on the endurance, because if you are doing this to set like a time for yourself and set a pace, I mean, you can just forget it, because your pace has just been ruined, because you had to stop, you had to like get out of the way of the throwing star, and then you had to potentially almost get in a fight until they get drawn off, and you're like, well, my pace is ruined. I can't do anything, you know. Turn the app off, because forget it. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, forget it. There's no PBR, you know,
I'm
coming
not gonna
to
be
me
able to,
today.
I'm not going to be able to catch up later and get the pace back down. This is just, forget it. It's been ruined as I just stood here for a while.
I just hit that peak heart rate that I was going for, and now it's ruined. But I mean, I can understand why Carmen so quickly wanted to stay, in the sense that now that you explained it, that they built this movie theater to cater to all of the things that teens, and I'll use that term loosely, teens like. Because I mean, it's actually, you know, seems like kind of a cool place, all things considered.
Right. Because I think they're catering to your desires, right? Like, you know.
You get to hang out in the car you love all the time. You have a lot of different food options. You know, there's Foster's beer. You get a movie every night. I mean, all things considered, not that bad. As far as concentration camps go.
Right.
This would be like the Four Diamond Star concentration camp, right?
Hmm. I know we're not at final questions yet, but would you guys stay at the Star Drive-In?
That is a final
Ryan
question.
Would. We know Ryan would, so maybe we'll just skip Ryan, because they show a movie every night, so he's like, I'm there.
I have an answer that's going to surprise you, go ahead, Mark.
Okay, they have Pepsi. That's a good one. I don't have to worry about the haircuts, so that's not going to really affect me.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere I turn, it looks like a 1980s Charlotte Russe if it got a little bit more hardcore. I mean, I would stick around for a bit.
Okay,
I'd be cool with that.
Yeah,
Mark's staying. Oh, no. No, that shower situation is disgusting. I'm not going to poop in a stall for all of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lactose intolerant, so milkshakes for every meal is going to be a disaster. I don't want to sleep in my 2010 Toyota RAV4 for the rest of time. So I think, I think that's a no. That's a no for me.
Yeah. Okay. And it's a no from me as well, dog. But because that... That Pepsi just had me, nope, I'm out. Like, yeah, look, you're right. There's a lot of cool stuff I like. You can drink beer. You can watch movies all night. You can hang out in your car. You know, there's not many rules. So that's
kind of
fun.
There's games going on during the day. Good calisthenics.
I don't know cricket, and I'm never going to understand it. And then there's nothing but Pepsi. And I'm like,
that's a deal breaker.
No.
I'll see you guys later because I'm going to go to the drive-in.
Mark lives at the drive-in now.
I would be like, there's other places with better snacks. I'm sorry. I can't stay here.
But I'll tell you what did bother me is how are they hearing the movie? Because they don't have the speakers that go on the door. So I have to think that they're using...
They go inside. Like, it looks like
the original Hollingshead drive-in speakers. So they had in the first drive-in.
Did you crunch some numbers?
First drive-in in New Jersey, they had a tower that played all the sound, but it caused a delay between the running time of the movie and when the sound would get to the cars. It wasn't until in 1935 at the Pico drive-in on Pico Boulevard that they attempted to solve this by putting speakers in front of the cars. And so that reduced the latency between the audio and the video. Still not perfect until 1941 when RCA introduced the in-car speakers with individual volume controls. And that solved kind of the noise pollution issue and created a better sync between what was happening on the screen and the audio that's happening in your car.
Wow. Well, as you all know, there were still, when I lived up in the Bay Area for college, there were still some drive-ins there and we would use the radio. And they would broadcast it over radio.
Right. Yeah, because in the 90s, they introduced FM transmitter broadcasts so that you could actually listen to it on the radio. So it would be somewhere between the range of, it was on the FM dial, 88 to 108 on the dial. And they would have a low frequency FM transmission that could go about 150 feet. And that would be able to allow you to dial in the sound
right,
of the car.
Right.
But that wasn't introduced until way later. Arguably, you probably had it in the late 80s, so not too far after this. But since you didn't have a speaker in the car, I have to think they were using the old Hollingshead system of just having big speakers attached to the screen, in which case I may not want to stay because I would be constantly pissed off and frustrated that the audio is not syncing with the video. And that would ultimately ruin every viewing experience.
You just take all those tickets and just get all the Pepsis that you could. And then you'd be like, I gotta find a way out of here.
Right. Well, I would be so hopped up on Pepsi. Maybe that would get me past it all.
Right.
You know,
I got to throw a bunch of birds at that electric fence and see if I can hop over.
You wouldn't be pepped on Pepsi. You'd be hopped. That seems like a real miss on Pepsi's part.
Get pepped.
Get pepped.
While we're talking about it, the stuff that happens before we even get to the drive-in, I kind of loved. I loved all the like tow truck world that they live in, you know, that like his brother just drives around in a tow truck trying to get the accidents. There's accidents. They're trying to like, get all the used cars. And because that's where all the money is. And, you know, that's how he got himself this super nice car that Jimmy slash Krabs ends up taking on his date to the drive-in.
Are we already at things we loved? Did we already jump ahead to that?
I'm really enjoying it. And the carboys that would come in and like crash that scene. Like there's a world that where I could have seen just that whole idea of what they were seeing, what Brian Trenchard Smith thought of, like, you know, should there be this economic collapse that they talk about in the beginning of the movie, which is something that he added into the film because the beginning of the film does not start that. I know that because the Umbrella disc that I got also has a little booklet with it. With it actually has the script.
Oh.
Inside.
Oh.
And I didn't get to read the full thing, but the beginning does not start in the same way. It just starts with the Krabs taking a jog. So all that stuff in the beginning, it was stuff that Brian Trenchard Smith added.
That's and, as far as you got? Krabs takes a jog.
And he was like exterior. Okay, Krabs is jogging. I'm like, that tracks. I'm good. Let's do the episode. No, I just didn't have time to read the whole thing.
Since you have the script, we should do a reading of it.
Well, we're all in three different mics. How does that work? I have one book and there's three of us in three different locations. So I would have to read all of it.
Exactly, Ryan. That's what she's saying.
Never mind.
It's time to get your voices out.
Yeah.
And we need a reading.
Yeah.
Never mind, Ryan.
While you prepare for that, I'd like to mention, I think this is a New World Pictures podcast first, in that we have had back-to-back movies with characters named Krabs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Angels Hard as They Come also had a character named Krabs.
Yeah.
And for the same reasons.
Yep. Exactly. Well, but one had them, one thought he had them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but to your point, same reason, ultimately.
We're not at final questions, but if you think you have crabs, but it turns out you don't have crabs, what do you have?
Yeah.
Lice?
I mean, you got something. Yeah. You got something,
you got
right?
Something. Yeah.
And good news, like, it's not crabs. Bad news. I mean, it's something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if I want you to finish that statement. Yeah,
I don't want the rest of that. If I'm him sitting in the like, you know, in the you know, waiting, listening to the doctor, please stop talking, doctor. I'm good. You just said no crabs, I'm out. See ya.
Yeah.
Well, wait, hold on. You're going to walk away and just be like, whatever it is, I'm good. You're not going to wait for something to get rid of whatever animal is crawling.
Mark, I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out.
Walking on sunshine, just walking out super happy.
I'm speed walking out of there.
What? And don't it feel good? Two cinder blocks just pumping the air with it.
But I do love this whole outside world. But unfortunately, we don't live in it too long because we get into the drive-in, and that's when we're watching the movie. Things are going pretty well between him and Carmen.
I know we're not at final questions, but I have a question. When Krabs and Carmen pull up to the drive-in, it says $10, I believe, admission, or $7.50 if you're unemployed. So my question is, $3.50 if you're unemployed. So my question is, what happens to the people who just pay full price? If you're employed, do you just come in and watch a movie and then leave at the end?
I believe once you're in, you're in.
I believe that is what they were saying also and during the commentary, is that when you took the unemployed rate, that's when your tires would get stolen.
Oh, that makes sense. That
so
makes
you pay
sense.
Full price. You're watching that movie, maybe snagging a Peps.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Well, then here's my other
or Fanta. Second, you could have a Fanta.
Second question to the question, and I know we're not at final questions, but imagine you pay full price. You go in there. You go to the concession stand. You get a Pepsi. You got to pee. You walk into that bathroom, you're like, whoa, there is a salon in here. People are taking showers. This is not the restroom I expected at the drive-in.
Right. A little intense.
Do you stay for the full movie?
Well, I think if they had smartly parked a Greyhound bus on the outside of the bathroom, I would have been able to suspend disbelief enough to say, like, oh, this is also a bus stop where you would have a shower. So maybe this is all part of, they've got a multiplex going on here. Movies and transportation.
Do you get thrown off by the cricket game? Are you like, oh, well, this seems like an odd place to have a cricket match.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
or the trash can fires? Are you like, huh? People really are cold tonight, I guess. Well, I guess once we finish turkey shoot and, you know, have a little intercourse, we'll head on out of here because it seems to get chilly.
By the way, the script had the ticket prices $3.50 for adults and 50 cents for unemployed. So don't know when the script was written, but.
God, I would love to read that script. Oh. Man, really love to do a reading of that script.
But once they take the tires, that's when Krabs immediately decides to look into this, and he's going to try and see what's happening here. And he goes to the office, and that's where he runs into Thompson.
146.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Two wheels off me car.
Only two? Well, you were lucky.
Lucky? How am I supposed to get home?
Well, you can't.
What do you mean, can't?
You can't.
You mean we'll have to stop here all night?
Oh, well, not so bad, is it?
Listen, pal. I want something done. My wheels have been stolen in this drive-in.
And you'll be stopping here the night, huh? You want a blanket issue?
What?
A blanket issue?
No, thanks. We've got some.
Oh, okay. I'll come back in the morning and I'll sort something out for you.
Aren't you going to make a report? Hey, mister! Aren't you even going to write it down? I know who took them.
In the morning.
Now that's pretty weird, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have just let that go and been like, well, mm-hmm. let's just go back to the car and, mm-hmm. well, I mean, he said in the morning, we'll work this out in the morning, obviously. I would have probably pressed on that just a little bit more. But before that takes place, there is a logistical problem in that in order to remove tires from your car,
right,
you have to lift the car up. Now, I realized they were in the midst of passionate lovemaking, but you would have felt the car getting lifted up before the tires were removed. So you could have stopped them a lot earlier. Like, are we supposed to believe that the tires just pop off and you don't need to jack up a car in order to remove the tires?
Is that in NASCAR. Australian? That's what happened, right? Look at how fast they go.
They still have to lift up the car, Ryan. They still have you ever watched NASCAR?
I've never seen that happen.
When you said that's what happened at NASCAR, I was like, when did they have sex in the cars at NASCAR? Oh, the tires. He's talking about taking the tires off.
Now, if they did have sex in the cars, I might watch a little more NASCAR. I'll be honest with you.
Now, I know we're not at final questions.
They put the crappiest cameras though inside the cars.
I know we're not at final questions, but I do have a question for the mm-hmm. two of you. Mm-hmm. Is Blanket Issue a great name for a band?
It's not bad.
Would you like a blanket issue? Would you like a blanket issue? The way he says it, like a blanket issue.
You want a blanket issue?
What?
A blanket issue?
I was thinking it's so way he says blanket issue feels like so like a couple things. Do they not understand him when he says it, or do you have a blanket issue? Typically how people ask if somebody needs a blanket in Australia. Is that the typical way that's delivered? Cause I'm like,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, you're not
I don't like the way you keep
that's
saying
a great
blanket
question.
Issue, sir. I don't like that. I don't like the way you say that to me.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, if someone said to me, do you want a blanket issue? I would say, what? Now, if they said, do you have a blanket issue? I'd say, oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a leg out kind of guy. And there's blankets.
Yes.
Blankets make me hot.
There's too many blankets on the bed.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I would be a little confused how we segued so quickly into my sleeping patterns.
Right.
But I would take issue with. I would bring up my blanket issue.
I like a little blend of heat and cool. But back to my tires. Yeah, he settles into that a little. And I do think that that scene is pivotal to me because I feel like that's a real line of demarcation for me in terms of that's a line where I thought Mark would either be in or out of this movie. And I learned demarcation. And what's so this week's line of demarcation is brought to you by
Blanket Issue.
Blanket Issue.
I mean, I don't mean to jump to final questions, but when you guys are watching the movie, they do a lot
when we get
of
to final
good...
questions. I am going to be dry. There's going to be nothing else. My dry hands are going to be cinder block hands.
Somebody's got Pepsi mouth.
So. But seriously, they do a great job of setting up the whole environment inside the drive-in of, you know, they've got this, it's fully surrounded by a wall with an electric barbed wire fence on the top of it. They have the trash cans that are on fire. There's a ton of graffiti and all kinds of beaten up cars everywhere. But did it kind of take you guys out of the sense that this is a dystopian future when they would have a long shot and you would see just beyond the wall suburbs that look like woodland hills? Were you like, how bad is it out there, really?
Yeah.
Well, it already... Like...
Go ahead, Ren.
No, you go ahead.
No, please, I insist.
No, please, I would love it if you guys just didn't answer my final question. That's what we should do now. You ask a final question, we just don't reply.
No, I thought that was odd, too. Because, to Ryan's point, the setup in the beginning was neat about how it just seemed like it was just kind of a city. This mm-hmm. is another movie in a row where it was just city. Mm-hmm. I guess Australian city. But that was a little odd that there were homes right there, because I was thinking... And I know we're not at final questions, but your question made me think, when the people inside of the drive-in saw those homes there, were they thinking, like, we should keep it down? Or alternatively, were the people inside the homes thinking, like, oh, my God, again, with the, you know, car revving and the chanting and the, hooting and hollering going on at this drive-in? Yeah, just seemed like the housing is probably cheap there because the noise pollution is just off the charts.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I know we're not at final questions, but do you think that that's in the Zillow listing for the house? That and do you think that they put it like a beautiful backyard oasis with no home behind you? And you think, wow, I'm going to have all this open space, but then there's a beat up movie theater or drive-in movie theater behind you.
Are they like walkable to entertainment, but be sure to pay full price no matter what? Every time you go, pay full price.
Not walkable whatsoever. It's an S road. Remember? No, there, you can't walk on that road. You can't walk on.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, but you can jump out the backyard of your house and there's the movie theater. Maybe the real estate agent was saying, oh, yeah, they're planning to knock this down and they're going to make a city park here. So you're like, oh, yeah, okay, I just got to put up with this for a little while and then I'll have a really lovely park behind my home.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, that is going to raise the HOA, but, you know, upside.
I know we're not at final questions, but... Did you just answer your own question, Mark?
I sure did. You sure did. He posted and then answered it.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I know we're not at final answers, but I just went ahead and answered my own question. You just gave one.
So, listen, Carmen's into it, and she's having a good time at the drive-in. She's making pals. She's getting haircuts. What about Crabsy? Crabsy, well, he finally tries to meet some friends.
Are you a dickhead or what?
What do you think?
I think you're trying to lick Thompson's...
Think what you like, I couldn't give a shit.
Hey, don't talk like that.
I'll have to catch you open.
Tell us the story.
What story?
Yours.
Nothing much. Lost two wheels off my car.
Which car?
I mean, now I get why he wants out. Like, this is his choice of a group of friends. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Because she's like, just make friends and have a good time. And he's like, oh, with these dudes?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to get out of here, chance. I think, actually. I think I'm going to take off. Because this, I don't want these dudes as my pals. These guys are the worst.
Right.
So,
right.
Nope. Yeah. I don't think I'll stick around. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really true. I mean, had he found different friends... he probably would have had a totally different attitude about it.
Yeah, correct. Probably would have loved
guys,
it there.
And honestly, I don't know how hard he was trying, but these guys don't leave him alone. So he can't make other friends. Because these guys really are into him and really won't leave him alone. So another reason why you're like, I got to get out of here. I don't like these friends, and they're clingy.
Yep.
Right.
I don't even want to. I mean,
even when he goes into the bathroom, there they are. There they are. Back to the car.
Right.
They're everywhere. They're always there.
Allegedly 193 people there. Why is this group of four or five guys the only ones he can find? Like, where's the rest of the 189 people?
He runs around the entire drive-in. You didn't see anyone else you could chat with?
Like, I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa!
Wait, did he just stop a doctor mid-diagnosis? Is that why he's so happy?
Yeah. It's what cured his crabs.
And just walk out?
He was just like, la, 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 la.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense then. In the meantime, Krabs is just checking on the car, making sure that he balances the flow. I'm not sure what that is. Mark, do we know what that is?
It's the flow of the carburetor. That's what he's balancing, the air and fuel mixture in the carburetor.
Was that a good use of his time, or just like, hey, why not?
Why not? You're here. You have time on your hands. Why not adjust the carburetor? Nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
You know, you want the car to run well. I think it's, I would do it if I knew I had nothing else to do. And the movie's not going to start till the sun goes down. So let's work on the car.
Right. Did he not expect that at some point somebody was going to steal that out of his car?
Yeah, that seemed really naive of him.
Yeah.
Also, that car in 3 days really looks like shit. Like, I don't know what's going on with the sun in Australia. But that paint takes a turn for the worse in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, sure does. Yeah. Well, I think we're supposed to think that it's longer than maybe 3 days, but I don't know. I don't really know what the passage of time is there. Because he gets out pretty quick. Like, he figures out how to get out of there. I mean, ultimately, if it's 3 days, that's pretty fast. So I just assume that there's a bit longer than that. But I don't know.
I thought it was like 6 months.
Really?
Well, that's what one girl says, is that she's been living there for 6 months. One of the first friends that Carmen makes.
Is that Beth?
That she says she's
been
there.
Did you hear that from Beth?
That she's been there.
Been there for 6 months.
I quickly went out of from Australia. Went into Australia and just took out and just backed up.
How do you say months in Australian? Mints?
That's what happens when you're stuck in a movie theater that long. You start to take on other actors.
Yeah, the accent gets weird.
It's going to get weird. Further complicating tensions between Carmen and Krabs is the arrival of the Asian immigrants to the drive-in. Something I believe was actually in the original short story. This was based on a short story. I should have said up top. But this was a short story from a guy named Peter Carey, who also wrote the book of Bliss, which was also turned into a movie, which was also released by New World Pictures in the United States in 1985. So, but this is a short story, which was called Krabs, and it's turned into the script. Peter Smalley is the one who writes it. He was a sort of a writer, novelist, TV writer, who also wrote The Return of Captain Invincible in 1984, so right before this. But that part is in the book, and that the immigrants are being shipped in. And Trenchard Smith emphasized when he started working, and when he started working on this project, because he took it over, he really emphasized that part of it. He does admit in the commentary that he may have been a bit heavy-handed with that part of the story, but adds in the commentary that there was indeed a white Australian committee that was against Asian immigration. So that's why he was including that in there. He drew criticism in Australia with this movie from critics. But that's what sort of sets them on opposite paths. But it does also become a good cover, because they have a big meeting at the end. Mm-hmm. And that allows Krabs to kind of like get his escape going. So
right.
Fortuitous in the end.
I know we're not at things we hated yet, but that's the part of the movie that I hated, I know it's a part of the short story and I appreciate that.
Sure.
But it's completely unnecessary to throw in the racial element into the movie, especially 3/4 of the way in. It's an element that, first of all, it doesn't really turn into anything outside of that meeting happening, but you could have had that meeting under any other kind of pretense. And really, you had an opportunity to create more of a story, like include the cops more, make the police more of a presence, more of a threat, make that something that is adding to the impending doom of being in this drive-in and not being able to escape. And not just because of the walls, but you have police who are constantly watching you. They're heavily armed, something like that would have added a lot more tension. Introducing, all of a sudden introducing, oh, hey, by the way, we're all racist. Like, it's just like, why are we going there now? That doesn't need to be in this.
Yeah, I appreciate the point he's trying to make and everything. And, you know, it didn't bother me as much as it did you because it's not something I hated. But I understand what you're saying is that the movie had enough happening that you know, that scene where he gets the gas and the cops are sort of like busy, like that there could have been more things like that where he's trying to get things from the cops and he gets a part stolen out of his car. Maybe he tries to steal that part back. Like there's more things where he could have done that. Whereas at that point in the film, when we do have the Asian immigrants brought in, it does feel like, oh, okay. I mean, they were already pretty much pretty shitty, but at the same time, like, I mean, I appreciate the point he's making and he wanted to make this sort of its own society. And he was, you know, making his commentary, you know, about racism and stuff. And I certainly appreciate that. But yeah, I see what you're saying. There's enough already happening that we could have kept going with what's there. That sort of is a left turn sort of late in the second act for us to certainly have this thing happen.
Yeah. I know we're not at things we hated, but I hated that too. And it, to me, felt confusing because the characters, you know, the collection of people that were in the drive-in long term seemed like a collection of people who were outcasts from society or outsiders or whatever, however you want to describe it anyway. Mm-hmm. So for them to be racist was like, what? Isn't their whole thing that they're like, hey man, I can't be chained down with a job and I'm here and I'm like doing graffiti and making my own clothes and living however I want to live.
Yeah.
But I hate you.
Right.
Asians. Like it didn't really make sense to me.
Well, we are, I think, at that part of the show, which is
things we lived. Eh? And things we hated.
So
let's kick it off with you, Mac. What's something you loved?
Well, I already mentioned that I loved the way that they dressed up the set for this. There's ridiculous graffiti that it's not offensive. It's just writing things in spray paint on the cars for no good reason. There is a plethora of colors from the restaurant where you get the food to the bathrooms. I mean, their electric bill has got to be through the roof with all the lights that are on. They have neon hanging off of things for no good reason. The neon doesn't even spell anything. It's just, we have a neon sign, so we might as well turn it on. But I liked that it was, I know this is a dystopian future, but it was a very 80s dystopian, like just everything was crazy and over the top. And I thought it really worked that it wasn't necessarily grimy or dirty. It was more like if you let a bunch of teenagers in the 80s run roughshod on a place, it would just be silly looking.
All the graffiti they got it for the movie is because they brought in a bunch of graffiti artists that had been put in jail, and they got them out on a day pass and they came in and did all the graffiti.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a cool story.
Yeah. Erica, what did you love, mate?
I love the movie more now, having watched it and then talked about sort of the underlying message and the like social commentary. I'll be very honest. I did not pick up on that when we were watching it. I just completely missed that the entire watch. It really, it went right over my head at you know, million miles an hour. And I just thought, like, what a weird kind of, you know, futuristic, dystopian, you know, punk rock kind of movie. So I completely missed all the important, you know, underlying themes. So really, I kind of loved learning that because it really kind of added to my enjoyment of it. And it answered a lot of the questions I had when I was watching it, like, oh, okay, all right, well, that makes sense. And that's why Carmen would stay, because people would just submit and just be like, this is as good as it gets, like, mm-hmm. and just kind of surrender to it. But watching it, I was like, why in the heck would she stay? What?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't she leave with him? They're about to get out. And so it all sort of made sense to me afterwards. So I think I, you know, loved learning that. So I would encourage anyone who hasn't seen this movie to just read a little bit about it, or kind of read, you know, get that context up front, because I do think it adds to sure. the enjoyment of watching it.
For sure.
Sure. Well, I love the soundtrack. I mean, yeah. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
It is a great soundtrack.
Music for this film is so good. They needed music. It is. And so the producers reached out to the Australian label Mushroom Records, which is the label for Split Enz. Mm-hmm. And they gave them $8,000 for some new wave hits from their other groups, not Split Enz, such as Australian bands like Kids in the Kitchen, Hunters and Collectors, and the Machinations. All of whom disbanded in the 80s or 90s, but have all since reformed in the past 10 years or so.
Wow.
Now,
Cruel World 2025. Here we come.
Come on, Cruel World. Pick them up. So it was hard to choose which song. So I picked two. So I'm going to play two quick songs because the soundtrack of this is so good.
Great.
That chorus is awesome.
It's so good.
I would legit listen to that.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
Seriously, a good song, dude. Like, I'm so bummed I didn't know about this band already. So that was the Machinations with My Heart's on Fire. Such a good song. Like, there's a lot of really good songs on the soundtrack. That's the thing. The other one is I couldn't resist, because it's also like, the Blu-ray menu song, but like, and yeah. the theme song. So I had to go with, of course, Playing with Fire, the theme song to the movie.
I mean, also, I need the soundtrack for this movie.
It's just good. It's really good.
It's solid. It's
actually written by Frank Strangio, who was the film's composer. And then it's sung by Lisa Edwards, who is an Australian solo artist. So another great song. Lots of really good songs in this. This is like... somebody making you a new wave mixtape, and you were like, I know a lot of the new wave bands. They're like, no, you don't know all the new wave bands. Right. And here they are. And you're like, oh shit. Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, no, this is good. Oh, I do like this. I've never heard this. So some really good, the music in this is fantastic. All right. We'll switch to things we hated. Very simple. I hated those friends. And I think I already went over those friends are the worst. Mm-hmm.
They were the worst friends.
They're the worst.
They're the worst.
Yeah.
I liked the little fight scene they had. It was certainly nothing crazy spectacular, but I liked the fight scene with the cricket bats or eventually like hits him with a brick. I also kind of hated that he didn't kill that guy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, because I'd seen this movie before, but I'd watching it again, I was like, does he die? I can't remember if that tall guy in the red, does he die? And then like, no, he comes back later and you're like, shit, I thought maybe he's dead. Because the thing about it is once he does get hit in the head and he's like laying on the ground, the other guys come over to him, get on their knees and like look at him. And they kind of look like that kind of face on it. They're like,
That's the kind of dick friends they are.
And I'm like, oh, that would be the perfect, this guy's dead. And they have this sort of like, oh, what a bother, you know? And they're just so unmoved by it. I was like, that's perfect. So I hated those friends. I hated that guy just didn't die. Like, kill that guy. Why not? Terrible. Let's switch to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is when there's just one shot of a woman with getting out of a police car that's wearing a bra that is also holding car headlights.
Right, right. That's glowing.
A glowing headlight. And it's my favorite scene because I'm just trying to imagine what that session must have been like as they're trying to get amorous and she's just flashing two beams of light in this poor guy's face the entire time. And he's like, I can't see. Could you just turn them off for a second? I'm just asking for 1 second. I'm seeing halos when I close my eyes because all I can see are the beams of light that you were blasting into my face. Could we take that off for a minute?
Yeah.
It just seems like such an unnecessary accoutrement to add to your outfit.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, I'm down. I'm down for that.
I loved it.
I know what I'm going to get my wife for our anniversary.
And
that's it.
Yeah, that was a scene that I believe Brian Trenchard-Smith just came up with like on the spot. Just wanted to have like a little scene of a lady hooking it up with a cop. And then they just found that crazy outfit for her. And it was just like, I mean, it's a delight. There's lots of little touches like that in this movie that I think are so great. Erica, your favorite scene?
I think my favorite scene would have to be early on, the dinner scene between Krabs and his brother and his mom, where he's just pounding spaghetti,
just crushing spaghetti,
because it's actually pretty funny and there's not a lot of funny moments in this movie. It gets like pretty serious and pretty intense, and it's like pretty tense a lot, and you don't really always know what's going on. So I just thought that was really funny. And then later on in the movie, when he's trying so desperately to escape and he has failed escape attempts, I was like, that's the family that like does his family miss him? Like, does his mom even care that he's gone? Cause she's fairly like, ugh, whatever. You know, I have my prized son who's like fit and has a job and, you know, and my other son over here, who's just a little, you know, tiny guy. Like I liked that one. I thought it was initially funny. And then later on made me like, oh, that's what he's trying to get back to. Just his mom and his brother.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. But and that brings up, I mean, I know we're not at final questions yet, but do you think his brother's going to be pissed about his car?
Yeah, I think his brother's going to be pissed about his car. Like, where is my car? I don't know where my brother is. I don't know where my car is. So he has to just assume that his brother stole his car and like ran away.
Yeah.
You know,
like, maybe it's better if he doesn't go home.
Yeah, because he's going home without that car. And I don't think they miss him.
No, they don't.
I feel like his room has been turned into like, you know, that's just where they put the
gym.
Out, like,
that's where they put all the gym equipment.
Wrapping station for his mom. Yeah, gym equipment for the brother. Like, that bedroom is gone. Right. They have moved on.
Yeah,
they've got a Bowflex in the corner.
Walking on sunshine.
She's got like a she's got like a pottery wheel in the other corner. She just like she's going full she's into crafts.
Making pottery wheel cinder blocks.
for Frank to just hold on to when his workouts.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to make a square on a pottery wheel.
Yep.
It's tough. Yeah. That takes skill.
So my favorite scene is a collection of scenes. It's basically the last 20 minutes of the movie, which I think is fantastic. Hmm. I like a lot of this movie, to be honest. And but at the end, when he actually makes the escape and all that, fantastic. An incredible ending stunt as well. Blasting out of that whole thing with that with the police car. But what just him driving around in the tow truck and getting the cops shooting at him, I was like, okay. Because I think Brian Trenchard-Smith is like a really – he's not talked about enough. He's a really, really good exploitation director. He knows what he's doing. I'm excited for us to eventually talk about Turkey Shoot. It's I really like that movie. I think it's really super fun and ridiculous. I will also say that in addition to that, that little chase scene that he does in his little tiny pizza delivery car or whatever, that scene was not in the script and was not there. Brian Trenchard-Smith came up with it and asked his producer to hold out for money so he could do that stunt because he wanted to make sure there was an extra chase scene in there because he knew that there needed more. He needed more action in the movie.
Mm.
And that has a cool stunt where he goes over all those barrels and like almost right. tips completely yeah. over. You know, he really respects stunts and stuntmen. And you can see in this movie because he's got a ton of really great stuff in there. So, but the last 20 minutes, just so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really are.
All right. Final questions. We're finally here, guys. What's left? I got some. Don't worry. I still have some questions. You thought you'd take them all. I got a couple. $10 is a bit steep for a drive-in ticket at that point, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
It felt like they were trying to trap people. Like they're trying to trick them into like, well, I'll just say I'm unemployed.
Right. Which is exactly what happens. I mean, so the average price in 1986 was guess how much?
I'll say $7.50.
This is in America, yeah. I should say, not Australia. I don't know what it would be in Australia, but the average price in America, Erica, 1986?
I would say five bucks.
$3.71.
Wow.
It was the really average off. Price. Where did Krabs get those high tops that he was jogging around in?
I don't know, because he only had those boots when he arrived there. I don't know. Was there a clothing swap?
Yeah. I
mean, was there a store we weren't shown? I mean,
they had the drive-in equivalent of a Foot Locker in there for sure.
Yeah, I guess so. Was there a swap meet on the weekends? I mean,
right. No. Yeah, right.
Like a normal drive-in? Come on, people.
Yeah.
Once Carmen and Krabs get into the drive-in, do they just stop selling tickets to new customers? Do they just like...
I guess so. Is that it? That was it.
Yeah.
That was it.
That was a lot. Well, the movie was about to start. You got to... I mean, the headlights coming in is going to interrupt the ambiance of the movie.
In general, like every night afterwards, do they just like not open up for new customers at all? Like,
well, eventually they do. They bring in two busloads of people.
But that's not exactly new customers, exactly. But yes, I get what you're saying. I'm just saying, like, they just drove up to the drive-in, like, unbeknownst to them that they were going to get trapped there. So,
and were they like me? They were just too dense to know what the real deal was that was going on. Right, is that right. it? Everybody else is like, oh, hey, don't go to that drive-in. It's totally a trap.
You're going
to
trap in there.
You're going to have to live there. Oh, my God.
Right.
Do you smell that smell? That smell is all those people trapped in there constantly burning tires and crimping their hair. Oh, my goodness. Don't go in there.
I did honestly, when I watched it yet again today, I was like, trying to look for, were there signs on the way to the drive-in that are like, don't go? Like,
I don't think so.
But there wasn't. And I think that's because, again, I think the for them, that's where they're trying to get the young kids to come into the drive-in. That was the allure. But what do you think happened in at the Star Drive-In Cricket Championship?
I mean, that probably had been going on for days. So for all we know,
they last a week, don't they? They last for a while.
It lasts forever. So it might still be going on today.
Yeah. Oh, Brian Trenchard-Smith in the commentary starts to try to get into some of the rules. Like, I think when he hits it up super high in the air, he's like, oh, somebody should catch that. It can catch that. But then that would mean a forerunner, which I like. I'm like, dude, don't even.
I said it at the top. I'm just as confused.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I'm probably saying it wrong and recounting it wrong because, again, it just makes zero sense to me. Yeah. I get it. American football doesn't make any sense to people around the world. I get it.
Right.
I understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
We have our dumb things. You have your dumb things. It's fine. All right. Let's get into some research. This was shot in Sydney, Australia at the Matraville Drive-In in September-ish. Now, I saw September of 1985 in the commentary. Brian Trenchard-Smith said spring 1985. So, I don't know. So, take that for what it's worth. On a budget of $2.3 million funded by the New South Wales Film Commission, the shoot lasted 35 days, and they often started around 3 o'clock in the afternoon and lasting into the evening. That way, any of the daytime shots, they would shoot at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because that was a time of day that Brian Trenchard-Smith preferred the look of the afternoon at that point in time rather than the noonday sun. So the way this looked, too, it had a really cool look about it, and Brian Trenchard-Smith explained the way they got the look of this movie in Cine Fantastique. He said they shot it on Kodak Super 35, and he said, we had special gates cut for the camera lens so we could shoot on the soundtrack area as well. There's a little soundtrack of on the edges of the film. In the same manner that people do on Super 16. So one reason for doing this is that you can use ordinary spherical lenses, which have much greater depth of field, particularly at night. You can really see a long way in focus, and this isn't usual in night photography. And in the way that they did that, that also meant that when they transferred it to VHS, it didn't become pan and scan because the size of the image didn't get compromised.
Mm. Interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and it is shot really well, and there's a lot of panning shots and a lot of dolly shots that, you know, you don't normally see in these types of movies where there's a lot of movement in the camera, which I really appreciate
it. Yeah, he keeps the camera moving a lot, and he mentions it in the commentary, and you're like, yes, thank you. I'm so glad he keeps the camera moving a lot because once you're at the drive-in, you like need to keep things interesting, and he's aware of that, you know, which is great. So how does this get to New World? May 15th, 1986, the Sydney Morning Herald revealed that New World had picked up Dead End Drive-In during the Cannes Film Festival for an undisclosed but apparently very hefty sum. Apparently, the plan was to release it in 1,200 theaters during the summer. That was New World's apparent plan. A later piece in another Sydney Morning Herald said that a New World exec described the film as, quote, the Clockwork Orange of the 80s, which is... Comes true in the trailer that we heard.
Yeah.
They were definitely taken with this movie. Not announced from the Cannes Film Festival with a distributor, but talked about as potentially getting one was Crocodile Dundee. So that means New World said no to the Crocodile Dundee.
Does that make it a nearly New World, though?
I don't know. Maybe.
I'm going to go ahead and say yes on that. All right.
That's not a new world. This is a new world. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, yes. They get to showing it pretty quickly because I saw in the Albuquerque Tribune in June 27th, 1986, they had a major studio sneak preview, which I believe has the guy from the poster in this poster of theirs where they do show the Star Drive-In and a bunch of people dressed up like punk new waivers, none of whom are in the movie.
Of course not.
So that must have been from the photo shoot that they did that they ended up with the poster with people that aren't in the movie. So that's in June, but they don't release the movie until August 1986, a week before New World released the comedy In and Out, which starred Sam Bottoms of Up From the Depths, which... was actually made in 1984 and it sat on a shelf and they finally put it out in 1986 in a limited release. And a couple months before New World releases Soul Man, their big hit. this does not end up being as big a release as the word from Khan was intimating. And in fact, I think, and what they did is they trimmed it down, as I mentioned, and they then redubbed it with American actors, or they nearly did it. I'm not 100% if they truly did it or not, but they found out soon that they did not have the right to redub the movie. But they wanted to. Now, if you notice also in the trailer, you hear a lot of people talking and there's like this radio. I'm not sure if they just stole that from another movie, but all that stuff was American accent. My guess would be that the game plan all along was to, when they saw it at Con, was like, let's recut the movie. We're going to dub over their voices with American accents. Nope. And we got this really cool, really cool looking dystopian movie that takes advantage of the whole Mad Max aspect and, you know, has its own stuff. And that's what they were going to do, but they couldn't redub the movie. But it did get good reviews, including one from the LA Times, which says Dead End Drive-In is that increasingly rare surprise, a seeming piece of schlock that turns out to be exciting and offbeat. It's one of those strange grindhouse classics worth looking for.
Yeah.
It's part of the original review.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I totally agree with. According to Trenchard Smith, it did well on video when it was released on VHS. He said that they moved 40,000 copies. But it releases on December 1986, which is not very far from the theatrical release. So again, I think that they just tried, they were going to cut it, do American voices, and they were going to pretty much really only go for the video market. I think they ended up, because whatever they bought the movie for, it probably was $3 million or something like that, something over their budget. So they were in profit. And for New World, they're like, we'll make a $3 million on video. Not a problem.
Yeah.
We put it out and just throw it out around the country for like a week in various big cities. And in LA, it does play in a bunch of theaters. And then we're going to throw it into video stores in December. So that's, and December is when it's actually opening in Australia. So by the time you could already enjoy it on VHS is when it's opening in Australia. And it does not do well, as I mentioned.
Oh, really?
It does not do well.
I'm surprised.
Australian, they did not embrace the movie. Anyway, here's what also is going on for New World Video in December. They not only released Dead End Drive-In, they also released Making Contact and Vamp. All at $79.95 per time.
Those are three interesting movies to pick up. Mm-hmm. That says something about you if you have those three in your collection.
Says a lot about
it. Says something now, but it also says something back then.
Well, yeah. Considering I have all those movies now in my collection, I didn't spend $80 a piece on them. But and if they did move 40,000 units, they definitely made back $3,200,000. So, by the way, I mentioned the stunt, record-setting stunt by Guy Norris. He had worked with Trenchard Smith on BMX Bandits, and he had worked actually on Road Warrior, Mad Max 2. And he's still working today, most recently on Furiosa. He jumped a 3-ton Ford truck 160 feet over the box office sign and was equipped with a special suspension harness to minimize the shock to his backbone. And that's it. That is Dead End Drive-In. The first of our Sci-Fi July presents Dystopian Summer. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you can, go see Dead End Drive-In and get that disc from Umbrella Entertainment. I'm not saying that because we're getting any kickbacks from Umbrella. We're not. But hey, we'd love to get some from you, Umbrella. If you like this episode and you like other episodes, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. You can get all of our episodes. You can get t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt. We got a couple new t-shirts, and I've noticed already some of them are selling. And so go grab those. Got some new designs that I threw up there. I don't even know if my co-hosts know. Anyway, go get a t-shirt, or if not buying a t-shirt, go tell a friend. Spread the word. Tell everybody about this podcast as we go through and talk about all the movies in New World Pictures and talk to some of the people that made these movies. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures podcast. Bye, everybody.